Hi there, welcome to episode 4 of The Cold Bath. Mr. Anonymous wanted to start this episode with a disclaimer of sorts, so we sat down in his living room. I want to set the stage a little bit. The faint, peaceful rushing sound you may hear in the background is not a river or the ocean, it's the freeway. Just an interesting detail that you might notice. Also, Mr. A has diabetes and his blood sugar was crashing before we started, so he ate half an orange. Apparently, a diabetic person eating half an orange is like a normal person taking speed. So the orange kicks in about midway point. I think you'll know when it is. But first, the disclaimer.
There was an opening statement that you wanted to put in your own words.
Well, in the beginning of Jim Marr's marvelous book about the Kennedy assassination, that's Mars like the planet, he says, "Do not trust this book." Well, that's what I want to tell you about everything I will ever have to tell you. Do not trust what I say. Never. Look it up, and by looking it up, you'll run into the problem. Where does one look it up? And how can you trust those sources? How can you trust any sources? Is there anyone pure out there? Now, maybe there is. I don't know. Paul Tsongas was a senator from Massachusetts. Forgive me if I say he was the good senator from Massachusetts. He died of cancer. He had had it once as I had it, and he had it twice as I had it, but he did not survive. And I couldn't care less that he had cancer or not. He was a marvelous human being, but I am a poor, febrile human being myself, so if someone has had cancer twice, there's a certain extra affinity. My problem was I wanted him to win. I wanted him to get the Democratic nomination. And politics is awful because you have to tell other adults what you said isn't right. Not right or wrong, it's not the way to have said it. But he told a story that was so marvelous, it made me not tell him what I knew in my heart would help him, because he's the kind of person who has the balls to listen. This is his story. This is in Westchester to the Democratic Party. A guy visits the Grand Canyon, nighttime, and he loses his footing, and he falls off, but he doesn't fall off and kill himself. He grabs a branch and holds onto it for dear life. It's night at the Grand Canyon. So he screams, "Is anybody up there? Help! Help!" Nothing. But he keeps repeating it. What does he have to lose? And eventually a big booming voice says, "I am the Lord thy God." Imagine what is going through the head of the man who fell off the Grand Canyon. And he says, "Help me!" And the voice says, "I will, but you must show faith." The guy thinks, "What the hell? Anything! Let go of the branch!" And then there's a long pause. And the man holding on for dear life yells, "Is there anyone else up there?" So don't trust me. Don't believe what I tell you. But you're going to run into the same problem as the man who fell off the Grand Canyon when you go to check. Is there anyone else up there? By the way, I am not God. I just wanted to underline that because...
But that story illustrates...
You know, yeah.
This opening statement that you want to make,
yeah.
Which is...
Who do you check with? Where is the pure? Where is the eternal? Where is the verity that can be verified? Where is it?
Why was Paul Song's story the wrong story to tell?
His story wasn't the wrong story. His story was a marvelous story, but Paul's act, because all of us have an act, and the more conscious we are of our act, the better. Paul's act was self-effacing. And you can be a lot of things as self-effacing. You can be a lover, a friend. You probably can't be a surgeon and be self-effacing. And you certainly cannot be the president. Lincoln was not self-effacing. The first George, he wasn't the brightest man, but the brightest men do not make the best presidents. The exception is Lincoln.
You've said to me, you've said what makes a good president. You said...
I didn't say it. I'm quoting one of Roosevelt's Supreme Court justices talking about Franklin Roosevelt.
Second-rate mind, first-rate temperament.
That's right. That's right.
And that's what makes a good president.
That defines the successful American president. And he was not being catty about FDR, and he was not being cruel. He was just saying the truth. Second-rate mind, first-rate temperament. The former governor of Texas.
Wait a minute, now, who are you talking about?
The Governor Richardson, Ann Richardson. She said this at the Democratic Convention, talking about President Bush 41, said he'd been born on third base and thought he'd hit a triple. That was a good line. The biggest assholes are running the show everywhere, not just in Holly Stupid. Just think about this.
You think that, I mean, the biggest assholes are running the show, but it still makes you angry when people say Bush is Hitler.
Is Bush George Washington? No. Is he the first Republican president? Lincoln? No. Well, Henry Kissinger talked to Chou En-lai when they were making the opening to China. This is 35 years ago. And he asked him, what do you, meaning the Chinese People's Republic, think about the French Revolution? What is your analysis of the French Revolution? And Chou En-lai said, it's too early to say. And he was not kidding.
How many years after this was that?
Well, the French Revolution is 1789, and this is 1970s. So it was a while.
I want to throw something out and get your knee-jerk reaction to it. I'm going to categorize this as the phenomenon of, or the flap over, the domestic wiretapping.
Mm-hmm. On the eve of the Second World War, Franklin Roosevelt called John Hoover, calls himself J. Edgar, and he said, warrantless wiretaps, go get them. There was no FISA court. There was no FISA law. There's a lot of things which cannot be accomplished through acts of commendable civility alone.
I can instantly see, and even I myself, not to play like, you know, the sort of liberal conservative game between the two of us, but I can easily see people's hackles being raised instantly by that statement, as if you're saying, yeah, like FDR said, go get them. You are a fiercely private person. How do you reconcile that idea with the fact that you can't achieve everything through commendable acts of civility with the idea of human rights, or not human rights, but, you know, privacy? I mean, it's an obvious liberal question to ask, you know, but that's what I have to, that's where I come from, you know.
All Americans are liberals because America is the embodiment of the liberal ideal. My favorite living author on the subject of political thinking is a Frenchman, Revel, R-E-V-E-L, Jean-François Revel, lives on an island in the Seine, and he has the title says it all. He is the book explaining the modern situation. It's called Without Marx or Jesus. Now, I know I've infuriated 9/10 of the country who cannot imagine living without one or the other, and occasionally there is a person who cannot live without both. But it is the liberals, that is to say 99.something% of the country, who are the subject of deadly assault. Now, in a national context, many would argue that just because so-and-so is a known serial killer doesn't mean the police should invade his privacy. And I know that there are people who feel that way. I've met these people and have spoken to them seriously. Should the police have kept an eye on Ted Bundy? Should they have kept an eye on John Wayne Gacy? Well, if they knew, the answer is obvious. Yes, if they knew. I'm sure all those little boys who had been raped and strangled and put under the floorboards of his house, I'm sure all those young girls who were picked up by Ted Bundy and strangled and dumped in the woods would have preferred the police, the FBI, whomever, to surveil these people.
So do you think that on some level, the flap over the wiretapping is people saying that they don't trust this administration? You're saying that they want that protection from someone they trust, but they don't trust this guy, so now they're upset about it?
Well, you know,
because there wasn't a flap over FDR using it?
There's never two opinions. This is America, and there's 50,000 opinions. But if Bush is Hitler, you wouldn't want to have Hitler surveilling you. None of us have a cool sense of reality, ever. But there is a giant bit of commerce that pretends it has nailed reality to the wall. And they're called the press. They have no idea. Just no idea. But it's a commercial product. And if I were selling the commercial product, I would not introduce the blog by saying, "Don't believe me." I would not raise it at all. I wouldn't say, "Believe me or don't believe me." I would just say what shit I had to say, and people could believe me or not believe me. But what they're not saying is this: we only have one thing to sell. Everybody understands the prostitute only has one thing to sell, but people don't understand the press is the same thing. Their pussy is fear. That's all they have to sell. Now, here's a question. I don't think it's ever been raised, and I pay attention to the media. I apologize, but I do. What percentage of the Muslims want to kill us? I asked this question to several very intelligent people, very different kinds of people the other day. And they said, I won't tell you what they said because it was just so ridiculous. I said, it doesn't even approach 1%. It doesn't even approach 1%. And then ask yourself, what percentage of the Germans in America at the time of World War II wanted to kill us? It was a very, very small number. When you remove the Scots and the Welsh, there were more Germans than Anglos in America. Of all the Muslims in the world, fewer than 20% are Arabs. And of the Arabs, I don't think it approaches Nothing near 1%. How many are in Al-Qaeda? Nothing like 1,000 people worldwide. Probably fewer than 200. Now, there are certain things you cannot...
Less than 200 Al-Qaeda members
in the world.
In the world.
In the world. But if I were selling fear for my living, I would not put that in the lead. And so I assume, and forgive the pomposity, but I came by it honestly, you've never heard that.
Can I tell the airport story, the $1,000 story?
Sure.
I was about to leave for New York, and you called me up, and you said you were very concerned that I was going to die, and you said two things. You said, first of all, if you're going to fly, only fly after dark, because when they bomb planes, they bomb them in the daytime, because that's when they get the news coverage. So only take the red eye, and never, under no circumstances, no matter what, should you fly out of LAX, because they, whenever the terrorists pick a target, they always try and try again until they hit it. We learned that with the World Trade Center. They've tried to hit LAX. That's proven. We stopped them. We know they'll try again. It's been about 5 years since September 11th, so we're due. You told me that story, and it was... And meanwhile, I'm as broke as the next guy.
Right.
Which is to say... $60,000 on credit cards. But the night before leaving on a trip, I paid $1,000, money I really did not have, to change my flight to fly out of Ontario Airport in California instead of out of LAX, because what you said, unfortunately, made a lot of sense. And it spooked me. Now I do fly in the day, and I do fly out of LAX, because like a lot of people, I think first of all, my wife was incensed, not to play her as the classic wife being incensed character, because she's cool with everything, you know.
She's a normal person in her right mind who would rather have not set fire to $1,000.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. And so I think that, you know, it's knowledge like this that I don't know how to process. This is why...
It isn't knowledge. Whatever it is, it isn't knowledge. Imagine the problems of the federal government. To take that little example and have that writ large. Imagine the problems of them. Why do you think the president, you know, who's obviously he's not the brightest person in the world, but he's not as dumb as some of his critics either. Imagine why they say the best way for you to fight terrorism is for you to go to work. The best way is for you to live your life as you live it normally. Because what are they going to say?
That's it. That's where this one ends. I hate to leave it on kind of a downer. But the orange was just overpowering him at this point. And so he had to stop. Join us in the next episode where Mr. A talks about his spanking style.
I never use a paddle. Never.